I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, David Remnick talks with Julian Castro. Castro, who was the Obama administration's Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, has announced his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination.
President Trump, we all know, sees immigration as one of his winning issues. He's more than willing to make extreme threats like closing the border entirely if it makes him look tough. One reason the issue works so well for him is that the Democrats tend to avoid it entirely. There really isn't a coherent view of immigration in the Democratic Party. And most candidates in the race now barely bring it up, except to object to what Trump does. But at least one Democratic candidate is eager to talk about immigration. Julian Castro served as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development in the Obama administration. But he also is former mayor of San Antonio in Texas, right near the border. And he wants to change the terms of the presidential debate entirely. Castro has suggested that entering the United States without papers should no longer be a federal crime. I spoke to Julian Castro last week, and I asked him why he thought focusing on immigration policy was precisely the way to beat Donald Trump.
There are different reasons that I've chosen to focus early on and rolled out as my first policy plan on immigration. Number one, that's close to my heart. My family story is an immigrant's American dream story. I grew up with a grandmother that had come over from Mexico when she was seven. She worked as a maid, a cook, and a babysitter, raised my mom as a single parent. My mom became the first one to graduate from high school, go on to college. My brother Joaquin and I were able to go to college, to law school, to become the first in our family to become professionals as lawyers.
And you're the son of real activists, of political activists.
Yeah, so my mother and father were involved, mostly my mom, but my dad for a little while involved in the old Chicano movement, the Mexican-American civil rights movement of the late 1960s and early 70s. And my mother was a hellraiser when she was young. She had started off in the Young Democrats and then part of the Raza Unida party that was a third party that at the time said that neither the Democrats nor Republicans are really sufficiently serving the needs of the Mexican-American community in Texas and the Southwest. So they formed their own party. And by the time my brother and I were growing up, you know, her activism was sort of tamping down. But we still grew up being taken to rallies and speeches and different organizational meetings. And so we grew up around this sense that participating in the democratic process was a good thing.
Well, as you watch President Trump behave as he does on the question of immigration, as you listen to his rhetoric on the question of immigration, let me ask you this. Is Donald Trump a racist?
No, I think he behaves like a racist.
What's the difference?
I don't think there is a difference.
So then you're saying he is a racist?
Yeah, I believe that he has been racist, sure.
And how do you go about defeating that? Because I must tell you, it behaves as if he is absolutely convinced that this kind of rhetoric of division on immigration is a winner for him, maybe more than any other issue.
I wanted to go straight to what this president has considered his bread and butter issue. This is how he stokes division. This is how he stokes fear and paranoia. This is what he's counting on in terms of an issue to win a narrow electoral college victory. And so I've released a People First immigration plan that represents a completely different vision, you know, and we can get into it in a second.
Well, what's at the core of it?
Well, at the core of it is that we should treat people with compassion and not cruelty and stop treating people like criminals and instead treat border crossing like we used to, which is a civil violation, reduce the backlog of people who are waiting for some sort of adjudication in our immigration legal process. You know, somebody deserves a hearing. They get their hearing, whether they're claiming asylum or they're here undocumented, and we can make decisions so people are not waiting years and years in limbo in the United States, that we create a pathway to citizenship for people who are undocumented, who are here, the 10 to 11 million people, not only Dreamers, but also their parents and other undocumented individuals who have not committed a serious crime. Also that we take a long-term smart view. Why would a mom come here with her six-year-old infant from Honduras or El Salvador or Guatemala? In most cases, it's because there's tremendous danger over there. They can't find safety and they can't find opportunity. So I've proposed the equivalent of a 21st century Marshall Plan for Central America so that we can help build up safety and opportunity there and then get the benefit of not having, like we did last month, 92,000 people show up at our southern border.
Now, one of your proposals is to repeal the law which makes illegal entry in the United States a federal crime. Why do you see starting there as an essential first step?
Because the mess that's been created, the chaos that's been created with family separation, this cruelty, a lot of the backlog that we have, a lot of the expense in the system has developed after 2004. Before 2004, we used to, even though this law was on the books, we used to basically treat this as a civil violation, a civil penalty. After 2004, we started using incarceration more and treating it as a crime. That's what's led to this mess with family detention, with separation, with the backlog that we have. So I believe that we can have a better system if we go back to treating it as a civil violation with enhanced monitoring of these families so that they show up for their court date.
Now, any number of political leaders, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a congresswoman from the Bronx and Queens, wants to ban ICE, wants to ban Immigration and Customs Enforcement as an institution, feels it's been so morally compromised that it's impossible to go on. I don't hear that from you. What do you want to do?
I want to break it up and separate the enforcement part of it, put that back into mostly the Department of Justice, and then have Homeland Security Investigations, which is a separate unit of ICE, you know, go on and do its investigations. About a year or a year and a half ago, there were 19 people who work for ICE, employees that said, look, this is not working. The setup of this department is not working. And I believe that enforcement would be better served if we actually break ICE apart and separate Homeland Security Investigations from the other part of ICE.
So the institution is not fundamentally broken in such a way, there aren't so many violations and documented cases of mistreatment by ICE that you think it's necessary to dissolve it?
Well, I don't think it's necessary to do away with or we should do away with enforcement completely, but I do think that we should reconstitute it, and that's part of my plan. I don't think that it should go on the way that it's been. I think that it needs to be changed from the way that agents are trained to, you know, administratively where it's located in the federal government.
Now, if you get as far as a debate stage with President Trump, I guarantee you that he's going to say you're for open borders. Are you?
I'm not, and nobody is talking about open borders. We have 654 miles of fencing. We have thousands of personnel. We have guns. We have boats. We have planes. We have helicopters. We have security cameras all over the border. I'm talking about a system where people still are subject to deportation. So nobody's talking about open borders. But the thing is, David, as you know, it doesn't matter if I have a plan or another Democrat has a plan, he's going to say we're all for open borders, just like they're going to call us socialist. It doesn't matter if you proposed that we literally move to a socialist system or that some people get relief on student loans. They're going to say that it's socialism. Part of the reason that I've proposed this immigration plan and that it's so bold is because number one, I don't buy into the BS narrative that the people who are coming to the southern border represent a national security threat. Secondly, because—
What does it represent?
Desperation and the beauty of this country, that people still see this country as a place of opportunity and safety. And that is beautiful in its own way. You know, my brother has this wonderful line that I wish I'd thought of, my brother Joaquin, who's in Congress, that says— that there's something a lot worse than the day when so many people want to come to this country, which is the day that nobody wants to come to this country. And people around the world want to come to the United States. We need an orderly way to sort that out. What we don't need is the kind of cruelty that this administration has engaged in. But the other reason that I put forward this bold immigration plan is that I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of the president on this issue. I was in McAllen, Texas, on the border on Father's Day of last year with a group of activists to protest this family separation policy. And as depressing and dismaying as it was to be at this Ursula Processing Center where they were separating children from their families, it was uplifting to see that the activists that were there were white and black and of all different backgrounds, not only Latino. And it reminded me that we share common values and beliefs. And one of those is to treat people with basic respect. I'm betting fundamentally that in that head-to-head that we can win with that.
Where are you on the impeachment question? Your brother sits in the House of Representatives. You're close, however competitive, but you're close. There's a big question now. Nancy Pelosi says, let's just continue investigating. Impeachment might be counterproductive. And then there are people within the Democratic caucus who say, you know, what more evidence of obstruction of justice do we need than what we find in the Mueller report? Where are you on this?
I believe that the predicate is there for impeachment, that the question is going to become, this guy on these different occasions basically tried to obstruct justice. The fact that he was Fredo and not Michael.
Right? You're referring to the Corleones.
That's right.
Fredo meaning the dumb brother and not Michael.
The fact that he was
sage.
Fredo and nobody respected him enough to carry out his orders versus somebody whose orders may have been carried out like Richard Nixon. That does not absolve him of the fact that he tried to break the law, tried to obstruct justice. And so they're going to have to make a decision about whether we're going to uphold that rule of law and hold him accountable.
What are you hoping?
I hope they do.
You hope they impeach. You're
I
for
hope
impeachment.
They hold him accountable, yeah.
Now, I hate to skip from the high-mindedness of policy and the rest to the grittiness of politics, but I have to ask, it's obvious that you're not leading the pack at the moment, but we're many months away from these early primaries and caucuses. What is your path to victory? Any candidate has to have in his or her mind a way of seeing the field winnowing and you emerging, as realistic as you are. What is that path?
My path is, of course, I'm going to focus a lot on these early states, especially that first state of Iowa. I believe that I can do well in Iowa and then go and do well in especially a state like Nevada, which is the third state. And then right after—
New Hampshire doesn't look good.
Well, it can. We're going to spend a lot of time there too. But I've gotten the strongest reaction in Nevada. And
I'm just curious, for a politician, what does that mean, the strongest reaction? You're doing a lot of retail politics. You're going into diners and all kinds of small halls and people's homes. What does that mean, a strong reaction, as opposed to, uh-oh, I'm in trouble?
You can just tell by the reaction of the crowd. And, you know, anybody, and I would imagine it's not just in politics, right?
But what does bad feel like? Describe for me what bad feels like.
Man, there is a range of bad, right? A range of bad from people walking out of the room while you're talking to not really paying attention.
Oh, does that happen? You're talking and then people are hitting the door?
Not very often, but sometimes.
That's got to sting.
You know, sometimes you can tell that you've hit on an issue that somebody really disagrees with.
Tell me for an instance of that.
I've noticed sometimes that, yeah, I'm very blunt about this issue of police brutality.
And that's sensitive.
And I have, yeah, I think I've noticed on two or three occasions that you know, one or two people right after that will sometimes, I don't know if it's directly related to that, mm-hmm. but, you know, have basically, you know, had enough of what
they
I'm
check
saying.
Out.
So be it. I mean, I continue to do it because I believe what I'm talking about and the path that we need to take as a nation. But, you know, the overwhelming majority of folks that are there because they're interested in hearing from me or from whichever candidate that they're there to listen to. But on balance, in Iowa and Nevada so far, I can tell that the reaction is the strongest.
Now, if this narrative doesn't end with a victory, sometimes younger politicians run to run again. And or they run for something else. You decided not to run for statewide office. Is that a possibility in the future?
I'm not even going to think about that right now. Let me give you the typical politician's response, David.
And but I'll do my typical roll of the eyes as the typical reporter.
We can play the part right here.
Fair enough.
Y'all can't see this, but we'll play the part. Yeah, I mean, you know, I believe that I can win. You know, I'm not the front runner now, but I wasn't born a front runner. I didn't grow up a front runner. I'm going out there and doing what families across the country do and what my family did, which is to work hard, to scrap, to do everything that I can do to be successful. And I believe that I can be. And, you know, the voters are going to decide starting next year.
Julian Castro, it's great to have you here again. Good luck to you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Julian Castro. He's running for the Democratic nomination, and I'll be talking with more of the candidates. Certainly there's enough to go around in the weeks to come, all on the New Yorker Radio Hour.